Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about perseverance and tenacity. Mm-hmm. And I've been informed by those of you who pay attention to what we put out as our next show and the little explanation and like that. A lot of times people kind of start talking about it ahead of time, which is very cool. Yes, hello everyone. And I've been informed that that's really kind of the same thing, perseverance and tenacity. I tend to think that perseverance, there's a little bit of a difference, but it's a good point that perseverance is keeping going so that even when it gets kind of sloggy, even when it's kind of like, oh my goodness, this has taken a really long time, but we didn't think it would, that's kind of perseverance to me. And tenacity being, I'm not letting go no matter what, even if it's not taking a long time, but just a, well, I know it's never been done, but we're going to be doing it type thing. Yeah. So in my opinion, kind of, but I can see the point that it's very similar. So hang on one second. Hang on. Honest to God, this really is a live show, isn't it? I was caught in my sweater. so silly. Hello, and how is everyone? Yes, you're all doing fine. Thank you. Yes, so we're going to do perseverance and tenacity. Mm-hmm. And so let's ask our usual question, because, of course, this is not a scripted show. We go where it takes us. And let's ask our usual introductory question of what type, what do we need to be persistent and tenacious about as leaders? What are we going to be persistent and tenacious about, right? Yeah. What are we going to insist on, so to speak? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Thank you. I love it when you guys listen to prior shows and like that. Yes, we're going to be persistent and tenacious about the civility rules, right? Yes. Because we want to have respectful, convivial atmosphere. Excellent. Yes, I like this one too. I'm going to call this best efforts because we need to be persistent and tenacious about we need you to do this, right? To get things in on time, to really think, to really analyze, to do whatever it is that your task is as, well, whatever you are, a participant, an employer, maybe the media. Sometimes we need to appeal to the media because always remember that the media makes public opinion. Yeah. And sometimes public opinion is something we really need to court, depending on what the issues are that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So we need to have our best efforts. Ooh, good point. The employer needs to have best efforts, too, and we need to be tenacious about finding that out and making sure that they do. Remember on this show, we call whoever it was that had the brains to bring us in as leader, the employer. We call everyone who had the brains to bring us in as leader, the employer, right? Even if it is not technically an employment relationship. So the employer on this show is a generic term for whoever it is has taken an interest and that we kind of report to. Because sometimes even the reporting is kind of not formal, but they want to know what's going on, and they had the brains to bring us in to figure out what's going on, right? Right. Mm-hmm. What else do we need to be persistent and tenacious about? How about our experts? This is a good point, who we bring in. Because we need to know all sides. A lot of times experts, because they know that they are experts, right? They've been brought in for their expert opinion. A lot of times they act like there's only one way, right? They act like, well, this is my expert opinion and that's that, the word of God. Yeah, and it's not necessarily true. And they know it's not necessarily true. They just wanted to pronounce and, I don't know, go have a drink. No, they want to pronounce and be kind of, oh, I'm the expert, right? Yeah, because they're proud. And you did ask, right? Yeah. But you need to be tenacious and persistent and find out if that's true, that there's only one view, that there's only one way of doing it. One of the things I personally really hate and always try to avoid, and you should too, is the law of unintended consequences. Yeah, I don't want to find out after we have implemented, after we've done something, after we've taken action, that something else has happened that made that taking of action kind of a bad idea. Right? Yeah. I don't want to find that out. I want to take action, and I want to know, or at least to the best of anybody's ability. I mean, life happens, right? And circumstances change. But to the best of anybody's ability and knowledge, at that point in time when we took action, which in the circumstances as they were, because things change, it was the best course of action. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Muhammad and others are saying that hindsight is 20/20. That's so true. It's kind of an old expression. I use it too. It's so funny. And you, thank you. Some of you have heard me actually use it. And it's true that sometimes it's like history. Sometimes you look at something that was done in the past, and you could say, what kind of idiots would do a thing like that when this was going to happen? Well, the answer is that in the circumstances at the time, it was a very reasonable course of action. It was a good idea. It's just that something shifted, something changed, and that caused it to not be as good an idea as it used to be, right? Yeah. And it is no one's fault. That just happens sometimes, right? Right. Yeah. So you want to have the experts tell you all sides. Yes. Yes. And you want to research all sides too. This is true. Yes. Lee and others are saying you don't need to necessarily call in fancy experts to come and talk to you now that the internet exists, right? But always remember, no, well, people are saying the internet lies. You have to understand that whatever you see on the internet might or might not be exactly the truth. It might be someone's opinion, someone's interpretation. I like to see whether or not whoever has put out the information is trying to sell something, for example, like their services in some way, or some sort of a product, right? Yeah. You see that in medical stuff. You know how it is. People get some sort of a, for example, because I don't like to use my clients as examples. They hate that. But you see, people get sick or something, and let's say cancer, which is terrible, and it's hard to get a handle on with, and it's hard, there's all kinds of information, all kinds of cures-ish, and I use that in quotation marks, all kinds of people pushing stuff and alleging that they got cured and so did everybody they know. Now, it might be true. That's fabulous. You could find something out really good. And I'm the first person, and those of you who know me know this, I am the first person to not go traditional medicine and to go what we call Western medicine in the United States. But this is, of course, a global show. But you know what I mean by traditional medicine, an actual doctor with an actual prescription-type medicine. I know in some of your countries you don't necessarily need a prescription, but something that's manufactured, right? And I'm the first person to try everything else first, right? Yeah. But you need to consider the source, and then you need to back up and see what non-source people have said and like that, because I see this all the time in negotiation. Somebody finds an expert who validates their opinion, validates what they think should happen, right? Validates their agenda, really. And so they go with them and really push it, that this is what the experts say. It's like when people say, well, many people know, and get kind of like, well, you guys are just kind of ignorant. Because you can validate anything on the internet. The most obnoxious, stupidest things can be validated. There's always someone who's doing it too, right? And they've blogged about it. But what we want to do is we want to look at all sides, because the law of unintended consequences is nasty. And we don't want to see it. Pardon me. And we want to be persistent and tenacious and exhaust all the information, all avenues that we can find, so we can make a really reasoned, workable decision on what to do is the key to this, right? Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Quite a few people are using the word truth, to ascertain the truth as well, quite a few of you, Rich Hussein and Margaret and like that. A lot of people are talking about the truth. I, from experience, know that truth sometimes is kind of an opinion. Think about that for a second. Truth sometimes is kind of an opinion. Now, there's such a thing as facts, and we have to be careful that they are facts, but some things are facts. How old you are is a fact, right? Yeah. And they're not opinions. What happened is a fact. But what we think about what happened and why we think it did, is that a truth? Well, we think it's a truth. We think that we are saying truth and being real, real nonpartisan and like that. But you have to think about the foundation and whether or not it's kind of an opinion. Right? Yeah. And a lot of truth is an opinion that has been influenced by lots of stuff, right? Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. People are talking, and thank you for all your participation. People are talking about religious truths. Whoa, religion is faith, right? My religious, what they call truths, a lot of religions use the word truth, but religion is really faith. Oh, historical truth. Very narrowly interpreted, maybe. Like carbon dating, maybe. Because even, okay, most of you know that I live in the United States, which is no secret, and a lot of you know that I wear a cross around my neck because, and I am indeed a practicing Christian. I do not think that any religion is a bad thing, because I think, and I am, yeah, see, you're already getting kind of excited that about saving and stuff like that and the truth. But my faith, I understand to be faith. Now, is it my opinion? But it's my faith, right? And I think that many things are true about Jesus and like that. But I can understand that my opinion about truth is not someone else's opinion about truth. And you must understand that too when you deal with negotiation and you deal with different kinds of people, right? Right, yeah. Exactly. And sometimes religions overlap, right? Yeah. And sometimes we can agree on some basic truths, but we don't actually technically, as a fact, kind of know what happens when we die, for example, because none of us have actually done it and come back to report, not their opinion, but the facts, right? Yeah, people, yeah, but those after-death experiences and like that, they are, maybe they're fact, but they're more like vision, more like this is how I interpret what happened. Because people do nowadays get resuscitated, right? And they've had an afterlife experience. And then they come back and report on it. And maybe some of the very basic similarities are truth and fact. But after that, because you didn't kind of really go all the way, you didn't really die, you were in the process of being resuscitated and kind of lost it for a small amount of time there and then came back, but not really come back from the dead, right? Yeah. So facts is funny. Facts and truth are funny, yeah? And you have to know, you have to understand that. And a lot of times people state an opinion, not as an opinion, but as truth. And they really, honest to God, think it's truth. They think they're stating a truth. That's not something, you know, crazy. They think that they're stating a truth. Maybe. But maybe it's not my truth, which means that I kind of think it's an opinion. Yeah. So you have to be careful about that, about the question, but how to ascertain the truth. So how are we going to accomplish all of this? How are we going to, what's the actual mechanism? What's the process about how to really be tenacious and persistent and find out these things and make best efforts and find out experts all sides and ascertain, well, all right, ascertain the truth or what people think is the truth, right? And the civility rules and all that kind of good stuff. Yes, thank you. We're going to have some empathy. And remember that empathy is the most tenacious thing we can do, because it is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Right? Yeah. And in order to have empathy, we're going to do the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. Right? What else are we going to do? Well, how about making some teams, some subcommittees, right? Yes. So that they can report back, so that they can get team spirit, so that they can do what we were talking about with best efforts, right? And the next thing we're going to do is we're going to be models of this, models of enthusiasm, because you need an attitude of success, not an attitude of failure. An attitude of success, not an attitude of failure. Right? Yeah. And the attitude of success, sometimes groups, people, because groups are people, right? Sometimes people have an attitude of failure because they have failed in the past, right? Yeah. They have an attitude of failure. They think, oh, well, this isn't going to work. It's never worked. It's never worked in the past, and it's not going to work now. It's going to fail, right? Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. And you need to model an enthusiasm and to get people to understand, not this time. This time, we're going to have success, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, and sometimes this is one of the things that you need to do. You need to give people a reason, an understanding, that they need to leave their comfort zone, a real reason to leave their comfort zone, right? Yeah. It's not working anymore, but it's the way that things have already been done. That's your comfort zone, right? Sometimes it's working. Sometimes it's great. But sometimes circumstances change, and what we always did is not what we need to always do, right? Yeah. And so sometimes you need to leave your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Yes, comfort zones are both, well, I'm going to call ethnic, kind of cultural, and they're also organizational. Mm-hmm. Organizations have comfort zones. They have ways things are done, and nobody likes to rock the boat too hard because it's not good for your job, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get on with this. Let's talk about the civility rules first before we run out of time. Yeah, the civility rules at their most basic, of course, because we have new people. Every time we have new people, too. Hello, everyone. The civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. We're going to act in a respectful manner towards everyone, right? In the manner that in which we would like to be treated. We will not be rude. We're going to have a convivial atmosphere that treats everyone with respect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to announce, I always do this. When first I start any kind of a group, any type of a negotiation, I announce the civility rules, even if I've seen these people before, because you know you get repeat clients. And even if I'm quite certain that we're not going to have a problem with this. But I announce them anyway, so everybody remembers and everybody thinks about it. Sometimes I go, yeah, and they all, we've heard your speech about civility. But I'm like, well, let's hear it one more time, just so that we all know. And they humor me. And like that. But those are great groups because you don't have to say anything again because they are basically in accord as to what they want. The question just is how to enact it, how to make a workable outcome, what to do to get the shared goal. Right? Yeah. And so they're not really in contention in that way. It's just a where should we go from here? What should we do now? Who do we need to contact? Type thing. So they're not a contentious group. Sometimes you have that. They're fabulous. But, you know, they get bogged down too because they are kind of sure, and sometimes what they're kind of sure of needs some flexibility. So you never know. I announce. And you need to enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. You need to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly. Right? Right. And the reason being that you cannot go, well, remember the civility rules that I announced at the beginning after the thing's gone uncivil. I mean, you can't. But why would you? It's too late. nip in the bud. Get the civility rules rolling as soon as you see some incivility, right? Yeah, so that you can keep it together, keep everything civil, right? Right. We, as leader, must be models of civility. Yes, you are. The reason being is we cannot enforce something that we don't do. You cannot enforce something that you don't do. Don't go uncivil, don't go nasty, and like that. You cannot enforce something that you don't do. Right? Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. You must lead by example. The question is, and we've had it asked again, the question is usually asked when I say that, what happens if you lose it? Try not to. I haven't lost my temper in a very long time, and I have a lot of experience. Try not to. But let's say it's been a long day. Somebody's really pushed all of your buttons. And you just for a moment there lose your leader model of servility stance. Oops. Let's assume that you don't do something egregious and have to recuse yourself. You haven't done anything that bad. But you have done something that you would call somebody out on the civility rules for, right? And we're fussy. And so what do you need to do? Should you ignore it? I think no. I'm very big on use yourself as a bad example and apologize, right? Yeah. Explain that you have violated civility rules and apologize. People will appreciate that and understand that it is serious, the civility rules. Yes. Now that we've talked about them, the civility rules, and we've talked about respectful atmosphere and like that, sometimes you get people, or maybe even one person in the group, who is a disruptor. Usually they're a bully of some sort. And they want to act in an uncivil manner towards their fellow humans. It might be their nature. They might have an agenda, whatever. But they don't care if you tell them not to. They're like evil little children, right? They don't care. And you need to be able to answer the question. And I always put this straight up to the employer. You need to be able to answer their question when you say that's against the civility rules. And they either say, I've actually seen people say this out loud. But let's say that they just imply it also. But the answer is, what you gonna do about it? What you gonna do about it if I don't obey the civility rules? Huh? What you gonna do about it? And then that's also catchy if they get away with it, right? What you gonna do about it? You have to have a good answer to that question because it's not going unremarked, as they say, right? Yeah. So what you gonna do about it? Well, before you take on this group, anywhere, under any circumstances, I know some of you are a little inexperienced and you don't want to rock the boat with the employer, but it will not enhance your reputation to have a mess on your hands and not be able to control the group so that they can get to a successful outcome. And that's what will happen if you blow the civility rules and they go uncivil and get kind of nasty towards each other. And then it'll dissolve and it's no good. You must deal with the employer ahead of time and have an answer to what you're going to do about it if I don't act in a civil manner. A real answer, not, I don't know, a small fine, like $10. That's not a lot, that's not enough money. Or something like that, right? A real penalty that the employer is willing to enforce. A real moment when the employer comes and wants to know what on earth is going on and you have to waste my time by coming here, right? I'm a busy person. That's sort of uncivil, but hey, they're not in my group. You need them to enforce. Mm-hmm. So the employer has to give you the power to enforce a respectful atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I like real repercussions. I deal with groups, because people ask me what I would ask for. I mainly deal with groups that are corporate organizational type groups. And a lot of times I can't pick the members, the participants. If I can, then I'll throw them out, if I can pick. And I've usually got kind of a wait list of people because it's cool to be. It's a good resume enhancer. It's a good thing to be in the group. So I threaten once and act on twice because everybody's watching, right? And they want to know if you'll really do it. The answer is, oh, you betcha. Yes, I will. The answer to what you're going to do about it is there's the door, get out, get your butt out it, right? Yeah. But sometimes you can't do that, which makes them particularly bully-ish, a lot of them, because they know this. Sometimes you can't actually get rid of them because they are a certain level of employment that is required to be in the room, right? Mm-hmm. I deal with the employer because I want the power to have them demoted so that they're not that level of employee anymore, right? Yay! And you must do this so that everybody understands that the repercussions are not just like saying civility rules. They are real. It will happen. Now, sometimes it's not permanent, right? Because people have, they're good at their job, they've got connections. I don't know why, a variety of reasons, but sometimes they come back because they are the right level and they beg their way back in, right? But you'd be surprised their attitude has changed because that was kind of tough to get back in and they don't want to have to do it again. And they must have promised somebody that they wouldn't do it again, right? Yeah, we'll talk about a cooperative participant, they become one. Mm-hmm. So you need the power to enforce. Mm-hmm. Because what you're enforcing is a respectful atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to best efforts, right? You have to be tenacious and persistent to make sure that people are doing their best efforts is the key to this. You want to be able to judge whether or not this is best efforts. Sometimes people, well, they are doing their very best. And maybe their very best is not so good, but it is their very best. Well, let's get some help, right? But the question is best efforts. Mm-hmm. I like, if I've got a big group, I like to create teams, like subcommittees, I call them teams, who will work together in smaller groups so we can all kind of keep an eye on each other, kind of know where our strengths lie. Because sometimes people, what looks like it's not their best effort, it's just because they have other strengths. Hang on one second. I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on. Don't go away. Hello. Goes to show at the live show. It's kind of like, where'd you go? Here I'm back. And sometimes people are doing their best effort, but they have different strengths. And I like to kind of analyze what people's strengths are and make subcommittees, make teams, so we can maximize our strengths and then report back to the whole. Right? Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And it creates team spirit. And kind of a little peer pressure to really do it and kind of be good at it, right? Mm-hmm. People are asking if I do the reward system, as in there's a prize for, I don't know, best researched, fastest, whatever the prize is for. Well, there's an expectation that you will not not put in your best effort. Sometimes a reward is a nice treat that is something that we all want and is something to look forward to, so you all work together real hard to get it. I personally, pardon me, took another sip of water. I personally am not real big on making teams and pitting them against each other. I know that people do this. I've seen it done. It's effective in its way. It's kind of tactical. It's effective depending on the group, somewhat depending on the culture. Some cultures are more competition-based than others. And not just ethnic cultures, as in the country, the type of background you have as a person. But some organizations do this a lot, and the people that thrive in that kind of an organization expect to battle it out. They expect to compete with the others. They consider their small team the best, and not a cog of a whole, not a piece of a whole in that sense. They know they report back to the whole, but they want to be the best report. It is self-actuating to a great extent. It'll make the leader of the smaller team, not you, but the that team leader, more tenacious and persistent. You kind of have to make a judgment on it. You have to make a judgment about culture, but you also have to make a judgment about whether or not doing that will cause some corners to be cut. Maybe that's an Americanism, but it cause fast rather than perfect, right? Efficient rather than look deep and find out if there's something that's going to be affected, right? Remember the law of unintended consequences. What's the prize? The prize, I've seen the prize be actually something kind of big, like a weekend or something. You know what I mean? And sometimes the prize is bragging rights and, I don't know, a medal, a necklace to wear around your neck type thing, medal. Even it doesn't have intrinsic value, but you can hang it on your office wall. You can walk around with it and strut around. You can wear it to the lunchroom. And your whole group gets to wear it and feel superior. Did you hear the word feel superior? I, as a basic leadership style, and I have seen that work, the feel superior, the pressure to be the chief and to make, and it will make the leader really kind of crazed and more persistent and make sure everybody really works their as fast and as hard as they possibly can, and like that, it has an efficiency factor to it. I'll give it that. I generally, although I have done this depending on the circumstances, the competition, I generally like us to pull together as a whole and have the teams, the smaller teams, call them more like subcommittees, and have them work together because it's a big project and there's lots of issues. Have them work on an issue, but not really be in competition, right? However, I am big on celebrating each success. But I think success together as a whole is a more effective way to find out all the pieces, right? All that must be done. And then when we get to the implementation stage where we have to work together, hopefully without me, right? Hopefully they can do it themselves. You haven't already created an adversarial relationship, right? Yeah. I am real big on the team as a whole. And we put together and we analyze and we think about all of it. But every time we take a step forward, every time we have a success, every time we make a report, right? Every time it's that time, we go for a treat. All of us. We have a party. We do something that everyone agrees is a really nice treat, nice thing to do. And wow, this is a great group to be in type thing. Yeah? Yeah. Ah, see. Okay. This is also, and this goes to best efforts, right, which is what we're really talking about now, and in the tenacity of best efforts, you need to not choose the treat because of something you like, but of something we all like and can agree on that we all like. I usually make it a restaurant treat, a food treat, a trip treat, that kind of a thing. Some of you are talking about stuff that, for example, I would not like to do. But it's something that you really consider to be a prize, like to go on one of those weekends where you challenge yourselves and climb rock walls and walk over fire coals and do tug of war and like that, right? No, unless everybody agrees that it's a great idea, maybe. But gee willikers, my idea of my rule for a treat, and I've thought about this because people have recommended stuff, and I'm like, my rule for a treat is that nobody has the potential for being injured, which leads out the climbing, the bicycling, the drowning, that kind of stuff. I don't want anybody to have the potential for being injured or ridiculed, because that is competition, right? And I don't want anybody to be last to somebody's first, right? And I do, well, yeah, I do have one more kind of rule, but that's a personal rule to me. Yes, some of you know it. How embarrassing. Because you've actually seen me personally in action and like that. Yes, all right, I'll admit it. I have another personal rule that goes towards outdoor events and treats and stuff like that. I really don't like events that have a porta-pot, right? With those little portable bathroom things that you stand in line for and like that. It's not my thing. And I have done those as a big treat because everybody wants to go. For example, you get tickets to some, because nobody can get hurt, right? That's really the rule. Nobody gets hurt and nobody gets belittled or gets last, right? And I have done, like, concert tickets that are hard to get, and we all get to go if we reach a certain milestone, and so we all work real hard. See, it's an incentive. It's a carrot as opposed to a stick, right? And, yeah, some of those events are a little bit, yeah. But I can understand that we all go together, we all have a fabulous time, and it was a treat. It's an experience. But not an experience that can hurt you or have any kind of you're not as good as the other ones, I'm the winner. No, what kind of a treat is that? Fooey, yeah. When you talk about best efforts, which is what we're talking about to get to the treat, and I do treats, I just don't divide people up into teams that compete with each other unless it's truly the thing that needs to be done. I mean, I've done it, but it's not my first choice. My first choice is celebrate each success and all go together to do it, right? Yeah. Oh, you'd be surprised. People are saying, how do you get everyone to agree on a certain thing? I suggest something that's really nice and that pretty much everybody can agree on. Usually I've got some budget for it. And so I suggest, well, in this local area, I suggest some place that's really, really a treat place and kind of expensive. And no matter what kind of diet you're on, you can find something to eat. It's not a set menu, right? Yeah. Well, that's kind of a different kettle of fish. If you've got a real religious prohibition like your kosher, there are some places that will also accommodate that. Kind of not as deliciously, in my personal opinion, but they will send in carefully kosher prepared food that they will serve you at the table. And you have to ask them. And you give them money. I mean, you pay them. But there's a way to get around that, too, so that no one is excluded. Right? Yeah. Sometimes when you have best efforts, sometimes you have somebody who has an agenda, right? And I see that they want something that they haven't actually said, but they've got kind of a hidden agenda. I want to know the employer agenda first off. I want to know what they really think, what they'd really like the outcome to be, and whether or not they're going to be flexible about circumstances and changing when you find stuff out, and flexible in funding, right, and in time. But funding especially, money flexible, right? And you have to remember that most people have kind of a bias, but that doesn't necessarily create the agenda. It's like the experts that we talked about. They kind of have a bias one way or another because they're an expert for that, right? I like competing experts. You've all seen this, yeah. And some of you have seen this and we've all talked about it, that I like competing experts if there's different opinions. Because I want to know what intelligent people in the field think and why they're so far apart. In fact, we actually get them in the same room and make them duke it out. No, they don't really duke it out. But we want to hear why it is we've got such a difference of opinion, right? Yeah, why is it so different? Mm-hmm, yeah. So we want to have experts who also might have an agenda. Remember that a lot of times the media has agenda too. And the media makes public opinion. And you have to be very, very perseverant, very tenacious to keep track of that now, especially nowadays when the media is so big, so diverse. So somebody somewhere, and then it got picked up, right? I have a rule, and you should too, that during the process, even after the process, that we do not talk about what we're doing on the internet, right? That we create a media spokesperson, if there is media interest, right? And that person does the talking, the writing. Because if you blog, if you allow your participants, your employer, your whoever it is, your experts, to blog or whatever about what you're doing, during the process especially, it will get picked up, taken into little teeny sound bites, taken into bites, and misquoted. And it will be there forever because it's writing, people. And I don't know why people think the internet isn't written and that there forever for somebody to find and to misquote, but take my word for it, it is. And so we don't do that. That's one of my big rules. No commentary as we're doing it, right? Yeah. Because first of all, when we start out the process, what we think and what we do might be different than when we finish the process because it's a process, folks. And it is something that we are getting done, getting it put together, right? Yeah. And so we need to really be cognizant of that. We talked about whether something is truth. Depends on your point of view, right? So we've got we don't have that much time left, my friends. I know we're probably not going to make the recipe again. I'm sorry. Maybe we should change the recipe. Maybe we'll have better luck with it. But we're having such a good conversation. And so let's talk about how to get this persistence going, right? Because it's one thing to talk about being persistent and tenacious, and another thing to actually do it. So what should we do to make sure that we've got this in the bag, make sure that we can really get this going, right? Yeah. What should we do to be persistent and tenacious? How about let's have some empathy, right? Some empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Remember that. It's important to know that empathy is something we can have. Empathy is good, and empathy has to do with finding out the answers to the 5W questions. They are who, what, where, when, and why. If we can find out the answers to those questions, we will understand why somebody has that opinion. Hang on a second. I need a sip of water again. Oh, sorry. Hello. Here I am. Sorry about that. Who, what, where, when, and why? Because we've got sensible people having true differences of opinion. Well, why is that? And we can also ascertain what you guys are so fond of calling truth. What is my truth about this issue? What is my truth? What do I think is true? Because it may be very different than what your truth is. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, but we got to know it. And we got to find our middle ground. Yeah. For example, who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? And why did you respond like that? Why do you think that? Now, do you ask these all in that order? Not necessarily. Do you ask them all in front of everybody? Not necessarily. It depends. I tend to be kind of upfront and ask in front of everybody, but it depends on the situation. Is it asked in a courteous manner? Oh, yeah. Always courteous. Remember civility rules. We are models of civility rules, right? Also, and people are surprised by this when you're kind of new in the field, but you should not be. Be prepared for you as leader to answer these questions. Yeah, and think about them. Think about your who, what, where, when, and why, and whether or not you have a bias. You have something that you think is truth, but to other people it's opinion. Right? Yeah. Think about your bias. Nothing wrong with that. Let's think about it. Right? Yeah. So we're going to need some empathy. We're also going to need to think about prior relationships and cliques, right? And be tenacious in not letting that happen. An attitude of success, not failure. Because sometimes these people have had a prior failed experience. Now, if I have a specialty, and you do kind of get a specialty as you go on in this profession, if I have one, and I'm not, but yeah, well, you get a reputation is what it really is. If I have a specialty, it is that I am brought in after a group has, well, I hate to say failed, but not succeeded in reaching a workable outcome. All right, they failed. They don't have any plan. They weren't good at it, whatever. And now I've been brought in to fix this because they need to resolve the issues, whatever the issues are. And I cannot change the makeup of the group. It's set. And I explained to you that they are, for example, the same level of employment. The makeup of the group is kind of set. Which means you've got the prior leader who failed as one of your participants, right? They've got an agenda, for one thing. And the agenda is, yeah, well, think about human nature. They don't have to be mean people or anything, but wouldn't it be kind of better if this group under your leadership failed too? Because then they could say, well, even Sue couldn't pull it out. Even Sue couldn't get that to go, right? Even Sue could not get that to successfully, to succeed. Yeah, wouldn't that be kind of better? Maybe. At least that's their opinion, right? Right. So the group has an attitude of failure because they've already done it, and they've got a agenda to not do this too hard so that it fails again and we can all go away and stop trying, right? You must help them to understand that it wasn't because they were dumb, but circumstances have changed. Well, the main circumstance of being that you're the leader now, right? Right. And that failure is instructive, but not predictive. Failure is instructive. We won't be doing that again, whatever it was that didn't work. Not predictive. We're going to think outside the box and get a new plan and work towards it. Failure is instructive, not predictive. Right? Yes. The other thing you must do oftentimes in order to, and you must be tenacious about this, in order to reach your successful outcome, is to give people a reason to leave their comfort zone. The comfort zone is kind of an Americanism, but it is the way things have always been done. And it's hard to be the first person to say, I think the way things have always been done needs to be modified or scrapped, even worse, but modified, right? Because things have changed since our founder told us that this was the way things should be done. You'd be surprised. Sometimes things have been done, especially organizationally or maybe in a certain community. They've been done for like 100 years, done, right? And nobody wants to, everybody kind of secretly thinks, but nobody wants to be one to say it because if whatever the new thing in is not so successful, then they're going to get the blame. But it's easy to go with the status quo. It's easy to do the way things have always been done. Yeah. So you have to give them, you have to understand the reason. And the employer, remember, to generic, the employer has to understand the reason. And everybody has to understand that, well, things change, and we're going to go forward and modify how things have always been done. Right? Because people hate to abandon their comfort zones. My friends, let's do one recipe. For heaven's sakes, we've got 3 minutes. Hey, we could do pasta with clams. It's a slightly shorter recipe. Here we go. I'm tired of writing it, is what it really is. We know that we have food as a tool, right? It gets us talking to each other, gets us talking about something we're not going to argue about, right? And it is pardon me, and it is, you need to have, take a survey. Yes, thank you for helping me. You need to take a survey, and you need to find out if anybody has any allergies, any kind of food that they will not eat, because it's a treat, right? Everybody, it's a treat for everybody, and so it gets us talking about something we don't want, we're not going to argue about. Mm-hmm. It's a way for the leader to kind of maybe talk quietly to someone privately about their, for example, incivility. Uh-huh. Or maybe ask a question, right? And people love it. Mm-hmm. And we have a safe recipe usually. We have polled, we have asked everyone about their allergies, their food prohibitions, and like that. And we found out that they can eat this, which is good. And we are now going to have something delicious to take a time out, a break, right? Yeah. First of all, we get hungry. Second of all, it's nice to have a break. And third of all, it makes the room smell delicious, especially if you have some sort of a cooking ability and could put something in an oven or on top of the stove. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We've had a vote amongst you. And people want to see the chicken chow mein casserole first. And not the pasta with clams. It's like, we know how to make pasta with clams. We want the chicken chow mein casserole. Excellent. Okay. I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to deny saying it, because you know how I think that you should be careful when I say this. This is an excellent recipe, if you have properly stored the leftovers, and they're not too old, for cooked chicken. Right? Because we're going to use cooked chicken. And so last time, which was not long ago, and there was refrigeration, you had some chicken or some turkey, or, well, if it's ham, it makes it an adventure recipe, right? But you had some sort of something left over, not fish, because it doesn't go with this. It's too soft. But something that can be cubed, pork, yeah. But if it's pork or ham or something, you need to understand it's an adventure recipe, because a lot of people don't eat that. So you have to be careful. But it's cooked. The protein is cooked. So about 6 cups of chopped cooked chicken, because I call this chicken chow mein. Let's have 2 cups of chopped celery. I think it's about 6 stalks. 2 carrots that we're going to shred. It's about a cup of carrots, too. Around here, you can get carrots shredded. It's fabulous. Let's have a nice big sweet pepper, a nice big red one chopped up. I like a nice big orange one chopped up, too. You know, of course, to core and to seed and like that. Let's have 3/4 cup of slivered almonds, because we like them, and they're going to look nice on the top. Ooh. And through and through. 2 tablespoons of pimento, if you like that. People either like pimento or they hate it. You know that it comes in oil or some sort of packing liquid, and you have to drain it real good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use cream of chicken soup, the condensed kind. If you want to deal with cream and like that, yours will be better than mine. But this is expedient, and so I'm going to use 2 regular-sized cans of condensed cream of chicken soup, and then we're going to have 2 cups of chow mein noodles. They are the crunchy kind that you get in the package. Hopefully you can get that wherever you are. They're relatively common around here, so people would have seen them and know them and like that and understand. Yes, you must bring a list of what's the ingredients in your recipe also, so the people can run their eye down it and see if they can eat it. Let's preheat our oven to 350. You know, did you notice everything's pretty much edible that we've got here? We've got the soup, which you could eat out of the can, and the cooked protein, the cooked chicken, and the vegetables, and like that. So we're not really needing to cook it through so that it reaches a certain temperature, but we all need to incorporate and heat it, right? Preheat to 350. We're going to stir together. We're going to need a pretty darn big bowl. The chicken, the celery, the carrots, the peppers. The almonds go inside. Yum, yum, yum. And if you like pimento, the pimento. People hate pimento. I usually leave it out, in all truth and honesty, and some people really, really want it. I put an extra fresh pepper in. We're going to add the soup. We've mixed all the chunks. We're going to add the soup, mix it real well. Ha! We're done, people. That's why it's so fast and wonderful. We've mixed everything together real thoroughly, except for the chow mein noodles, which go on the top, which is what makes it crunchy. We're going to transfer it to a big rectangular baking dish, big enough to hold the whole thing. Pat it down. Do I grease it usually? Just because I don't know why I usually just grease stuff. But you probably don't need to because this is not going to stick. We're going to bake it for about 45 minutes till it's all nice and hot and delicious and bubbly and like that. I put a cover on it so that it's moist because you don't want to dry out your stuff. And you want the peppers and everything to soften. And then we're going to take it out of the oven. We're going to sprinkle it with our lovely chow mein noodles, which are crunchy. Stick it back into the oven for about 10 minutes uncovered. There you have it. You need to let it sit and rest for a few minutes before you serve it. First of all, it's beastly hot. Second of all, it makes it kind of form together. It's always good to let things like that rest so that they get congealed. Well, not congealed, but you know what I mean, get thicker. Everybody loves it. It's yummy. Yes. You will list all the ingredients because, well, it's got nuts and things, and you want to be sure that people know this, right? Yeah. Yes. If somebody is unfamiliar with chicken chow mein, with the chow mein noodle and things, they come in a package. I actually leave the package there for people to look at and read the ingredient list just in case there's something in it that they can't eat. Because there's lots of other stuff to eat, right? We don't have one thing. It's a buffet. It's lots of yummy things. But this is delicious. It's relatively neat to eat, as in it's not real messy. You use a big serving spoon. And I favor a big pot of rice, just plain rice, so that people can put it underneath if they like such a thing. And most people do. Yeah. But I don't put the rice in it or underneath it to serve because that's your choice, how much you want or if you want any. Mm-hmm. So there we have it. Ha. We managed to do it. We are out of time, my friends. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Yes, we finally did the chicken chow mein casserole. You guys are like, finally. Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.